evening, folks, boys and girls, and welcome to another edition of the Trinity Tins. And as is our form of the last few weeks, we have another guest on tonight. We have Niall Jay, who is a blogger over on the Celtic Star. So welcome aboard, Niall. Be prepared for a roller coaster ride with these nutters.
Certainly picked a tough one to make a debut after a result like that yesterday, Eric.
Yeah, definitely. And as usual, I'm joined by my colleagues Joe McHugh from Video Cells and James Forrest from the Celtic blog. And obviously, I'm Eric Knott from Read Celtic. So you know us all at this stage fairly well. We won't beat around the bush. We're going to jump right in tonight. Obviously, that was a shocking result at Dens Park yesterday. And it's probably fair to say that our football has become so pedestrian and so predictable now, even Dundee have it figured out. And Stephen Presley has it figured out. And that was a pretty shocking performance yesterday at Dens Park. There was no sort of thrust from the team, no sort of ability to break down that Dundee team. Rodgers just does not seem to have a plan B at the moment. And tactically, the tactical inflexibility is still there. And this is something we've discussed probably a fair bit over the last few weeks on the podcast about, you know, we've kind of delved into his tactical inflexibility. And he showed that again yesterday. So it's my belief that if we enter into the game against Hearts, the domestic games that we have coming up at the moment, aside from Europe, we have Hearts next weekend at Tynecastle, we have Falkirk midweek at home, and then we have Rangers at the League Cup semi-final at Hampden. So that's a serious, okay, Falkirk, probably not too much to worry about there. Although the way things are going now at the moment, you wouldn't really know. Hearts away, if Rodgers approaches that with the same kind of tactical naivety is the word I'd probably use, as he did yesterday at Dundee, I could see us on the end of a 4-0 hammering like we were back in 2017 when we came to the end of that record beating run that we are, you know, that record unbeaten run that we had up until that point, and then Hearts gave us a hiding. Those guys are flying high. They're doing really well at the moment. They're scoring goals. Morale is through the roof. They're 5 points clear at the top of the table. They are in no way going to be afraid of us. In no way are they going to be afraid of us. So, yeah, we need to sort of pull yesterday's result apart. So I'll go to you first, Joe. What was your feeling on events at Dens Park yesterday?
It was quite predictable. The team played flat as usual. Their opponents raised their game and they got a couple of breaks. Things went quite well for them. And it was another of their games where we could have played all night without scoring. We brought in Johnny Kenny at half-time. Never really changed anything. You could put anyone in that team just now and they would struggle. It's not as if there'll be a bit of a clamour now for Arne Engels to come in and change things. And a couple of weeks ago, it was Paolo Bernardo changed things. And it's... There's a deep malaise. Rodgers has got a fair element of responsibility in it, but no one quite knows what's really going on. We know fairly certain that the chief executive loves selling players. He loves undermining the manager and strengthening the balance sheet. So that's quite an issue. We know that there's a network out there that will run down. They've already lost Adam Eder to this argument, but the Chris Boyd types and various others, certainly not just Chris Boyd, there's plenty of Celtic fans on board with this, keep throwing 26 million was wasted last summer. We've told them many, many times that Engels started 9 Champions League matches last season, Trusty started 9 Champions League matches last season, Adam Eder started 3 and scored 3 goals and did a hell of an assist and the most important goal of the season against Young Boys Bern. So that argument is done and dusted. Those guys were well worth bringing to Celtic. Their price tags are all down to the incompetence of our mute CEO. But the here and now, Rodgers has to find some way of getting more out of the players, and he must absolutely abandon the notion of playing a right winger. We are overloaded with left wingers that still to prove themselves. We've got right wingers that have proven themselves, and it's not fully fair on the guy, but every time Yang plays, folk are saying, surely that's the last. Surely that's the last. It wasn't in the match day squad against Motherwell. He started yesterday and was taken off at half-time. We've got to find a system that doesn't have a right winger. Perhaps Alistair Johnston might add some width from right back, but he's not going to be playing as right winger. So Rodgers got to just buckle down, a bit more practical, possibly playing two strikers. We've got enough midfielders that we could be playing with four in midfield, possibly even five. But you'll need to change things, because when Stephen Presley can read you, that's time to take stock. So there's lots and lots to be worked on. I wouldn't really have gone my backside at the Storm Gratz match in midweek. The whole focus has got to be Hearts and Tynecastle. And right now, there's barely a Celtic sport to come down a draw. Offer Celtic a draw and a chance to regroup and try and build on that. And most folk will take it. And that's a concerning state of affairs. There's lots of factors involved in it. But on the training ground at Lennox Town, Rodgers has to put a new system with a right winger. If we start 4-3-3 with Yang or Forrest, Forrest is an impact sub, but I don't think he's ready to start a game of intensity at Tynecastle on Sunday. So plenty for the manager to think about.
Absolutely. There's a lot of arguments going to and fro today, and a lot of debate going on today as to whether, you know, who takes responsibility for yesterday's result. Does part of the responsibility fall on the board? Does part of the responsibility fall on Rodgers? And I suppose there's one way of looking at it, and that is that this time last year, we had 70 extra goals, or we had players who were worth 70 extra goals in the front line. And that's, to remove that and not replace it is a huge thing. But even if you looked at Brendan Rodgers' tactics last season, they weren't much different to the tactics that he's using now. It was just that the players that he was using up front had the skill set to unlock defences. They were that much better than the front line that we have at the moment. The problem is the front line that we have at the moment cannot unlock defences. We might have been slow in the build-up. We might have been pedestrian in the build-up last year, but there is no doubting that the tactics that Brendan Rodgers used that time was effective. They were effective because we scored record goals last season, a record number of goals. But it is obvious when you take 70 goals out of the team that that's going to have an impact. Now, that wasn't Brendan Rodgers. That wasn't his call. That was the board's call, and it was the board's call not to replace those players. So I'll go to you, James. Who is most responsibility for the position, or who holds most responsibility for the position that we find ourselves in right now? Would you put it on the lay it squarely at the doors of the door of the board, or would you now lay it squarely at Brendan Rodgers? Because the belief is that he should be doing better, even with what he has, he should be doing better.
Well, you know, there's something that I heard once, and I can't remember where I heard it, but it's stuck in my brain and it's never really left it. Somebody said that the hardest thing to do in professional sports is to be the losing manager at halftime in the Super Bowl. Because you need to change the entire system and the entire strategy that got you there in the first place. And that's where we are right now. We're in that position. Rodgers has built this team to play a certain way. And if Rodgers is finding it difficult to change that, then I sort of understand why. The problem is that this team can no longer play that way because he's been hamstrung in having the kind of players who can play that way. And I've been writing about the manager as architect for at least 2 years. And that's why Ange was so successful, because when Ange came in and signed players he knew fit exactly in specific slots in his system. And he signed them for that exact purpose. Rodgers has done the same. And when Rodgers has been allowed to do that, Rodgers has been successful. This season, Rodgers was not allowed to do that. And he doesn't have the players who can play any system. So now Rodgers is trying to improvise in every single game. He's not doing it very well. And for that, he carries some of the flak. He's not changed. You know, there's various elements to how a team plays. There's the tactics, there's the style, there's the, you know what I mean, the intensity and all that stuff. And we're not playing with enough intensity, and we're not playing with enough speed. So I read a stat online today that said that we had over 87% of possession or something. We made 700 passes in the game, and 80-odd percent of those passes went backwards. That is unacceptable. That's why we're in this position in terms of performances and results on the park. But you cannot ignore the fact that Rodgers' team has been asset stripped, all the players that made it work. And it's absolutely shocking. There's enough blame to go around here. Enough blame to go around here. But the fact is, the guy's team's been asset stripped.
And this time last year, you know, just around this time last year, we were actually cruising in the Champions League and we were doing quite well. And everybody was confident that the team that we had was really good and it was scoring goals for fun.
Who seems to want to dominate the conversation tonight? If the board had a brain, they'd hire a new manager before the January window, right? So take that to its natural conclusion. We know that the board doesn't have a strategic thought in their heads, right? So they sack Brendan Rodgers. Do you trust them to appoint the next manager? Because I don't. I don't trust them at all. Maybe you do. Maybe you want to think things through before making stupid comments like that. Sorry.
Okay, that's fair enough. And look, I've kept you quiet there for long enough, Niall. We'll have to come across to Niall and get Niall's opinion on all of this. How do you feel? I mean, obviously, Niall, what's your take on yesterday's result? And also, what's your take then on what, you know, whose responsibility is it a collective responsibility across the board, or is it the fact that, as James said, the team has been asset stripped, and it has had a serious effect?
I think it's worth looking at the two things. I think it's worth looking at the game itself in isolation from yesterday and Rodgers' impact on that. But James is right. What you can't get away from is the root cause of all of this goes back to the boardroom. Now, yes, asset stripping is probably the best way to put it. You've lost players like Jota to injury, but there's others. Kyogo's not replaced. Kuhn's pace is not replaced. The number of assists and goals from that team. And even if you take Ademida, who perhaps wasn't everyone's favourite, that's still 20 goals from that team.
Yeah.
But you look into that back performance yesterday, and that's on the manager. No Celtic team goes to Dens Park and loses to a Stephen Presley team. No Celtic manager should be losing to a Stephen Presley team. It's quite simply not acceptable at any time. Even if this was in COVID and we were stripped back to the bare bones, you would still expect to go to Dundee and put in a more of a fight and a performance than we got yesterday. It was a joy. I wrote an article this morning, and I think the word I used in there was it was a joyless experience watching that yesterday. Oh, yeah. And I'm afraid it's actually becoming a pattern, whereas back in the day of Ange Postecoglou in charge of Celtic, you couldn't take your eyes off the screen. You couldn't take your eyes off the action. It was constant. Even the substitutes coming on all made an impact. Now we've got Brendan Rodgers playing this, and I get it. I understand it's a different style and it's a possession-based approach that he's taken to the games. But what it is doing is just having players passing from Scales to Carter Vickers into McGregor. You see, our playmakers at the moment are looking like Carter Vickers and Scales half the time. We've got three midfielders who seem disjointed. Now, whether that's the loss of Greg Taylor, who used to come into the invert into that central area, perhaps support Callum McGregor a little bit. I think the idea at the start of the season had been to maybe go a little bit more vertical, perhaps have Tierney going down the left-hand side and maybe having Hatate dropping back that little bit deeper, or Engels coming back occasionally that little bit deeper. It was quite evident long before the Dundee game that Hatate and Nygren are not particularly suited to being in the same team together. Callum McGregor is starting to look isolated in the centre of the park, to the point that he's getting criticism, whereas, some of that criticism is valid. But he's having to do an awful, much like that COVID season, we're looking at Callum having to do an awful lot of extra work to cover the defensive responsibilities of players who the defensive side of the game doesn't come naturally to.
Yeah.
Now, we could look at the system in terms of going maybe to three at the back, and I would suggest perhaps even a box in midfield rather than a flat midfield four, and using wing-backs, allowing us to play still with one striker, because we've only got one Rodgers really trusts. But it would allow Balak Wisher perhaps or Hatate to play just off a striker, and perhaps allow Nygren to play on the other, but narrower, and allow the width to come from wing-backs. We've already got Sirachi, who's looks to every inch a wing back to me, proper wing back to me. And on the other side, it might be the perfect timing of it because we've got somebody like Johnston coming back into the thinking. It would be that insanity question of repeating the same thing and expecting different results if we don't look to try something else. Now, whether that's personnel or whether it's tactics, whether there's people in that squad who are not getting games, who have the appetite and the hunger to come in and impact games to prove a point, or perhaps it is a case of we'd look to change the system itself. But this sticking to the 4-3-3, and as Joe mentioned earlier on, not having the right winger to come in, we've used Nygren, we've used Yang, we've used Forrest, we've used Maeda. The only one that has been passably acceptable has been Maeda, and even that, you're asking him to play in his third favourite position. It is time to try something else, Brendan. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Well, he did. Sorry, Joe. I'll let you go there, James. He did allude to that yesterday, where he said we're going to have to look at it differently. We're going to have to look at 3-5-2, possibly 3-4-3, or variating or changing the formation. So, yeah, James, I mean, if he goes to Tynecastle, and I'll move on to the next part of the agenda, and you can feed into that, James. If he goes to Tynecastle next week, setting up the same way as he did yesterday, it's going to be a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
I think so, definitely. I'm just looking at some of the comments, and I'm slightly baffled to see how anyone can believe some of the stuff that's getting posted on the other night. That maybe the answer lies with Yamada and Inamura and Osmond and all that. You know what? I'll accept that. I will accept that argument when these guys are scoring 4 or 5 times every week in the Lowland League. The Lowland League, where they're not exactly setting the world on fire.
Steady, James. They're not able to play in the Lowland League. They're not playing anywhere. Not playing anywhere. Well, Simpson Pussy played against these 5 and lost 5 goals.
Well, I think that even more unbelievable and baffling why we ever signed these guys in the first place. We don't have a coherent plan. You cannot look at the operation at Celtic Park and think that it's a coherent plan. There is no strategy at any level of our club, any level. We have players withering on the vine here. I mean, I think that's atrocious. That's absolutely atrocious to me. It just proves what we've been saying all along. This is a club that does not have a strategy, that does not have a clue. These guys, by the way, are not the answer to where we are right now. They're not. They simply are not.
James, the honest truth of that is, though, we don't actually know, do we?
You think Mad is going to come in and play every week? That's barking. That's mad.
You'd be as well talking about bringing back Palmer home in the Rocky. It's not going to happen for these guys.
Correct. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. We've got no coherent policy
It's a valid point as well, though. We don't know what these guys are capable of because they've never been able to show us what they're capable of.
Oh, the professional has watched them and doesn't think that they're good enough. Do you know what? As much as I might not be able to stand watching the guy's team right now, I'll take his word for it.
It is tempting to take his word for it.
I've read some absolute nonsense about Rodgers. I really have. Rodgers is deliberately hamstringing himself. I don't think so. This is Rodgers' own career. He's gambling me here. This is Rodgers' own reputation. He's not leaving good players at the team just because he doesn't personally like who signed them. It's nonsense. No one in football does that. No professional manager who values his own reputation leaves out good players just to prove a point. It is stupid beyond belief.
It's also stupid to stick to a 4-3-3 formation despite the evidence showing that it's not working. So I wouldn't necessarily put it beyond Rodgers to be scoring some sort of political point
There was an example I was going to use about Martin O'Neill. When Martin O'Neill came in, there were 4 or 5 players in that squad who none of us saw any value in whatsoever. We wondered what the hell they were doing at Celtic. And he transformed 2 of them. And he really excellent footballers. Bobby Petta and Didier Gap playing them as wing-backs. Whoever thought of that? But O'Neill saw something and said, yeah, we can do that. And they were excellent. For one season, those guys looked like world beaters. They were tremendous.
Yeah, Bobby Petta was in the 6-2.
It was quite interesting to see one of his comments yesterday. It seemed a bit off the cuff. And he said he was considering looking at the profiles of the players he was using. So as much as we used that 3-at-the-back formation and that lopsided 3-in-the-back formation was just no right-back yesterday for the second half. It was interesting to see that he did mention the profiles of the players. Now, earlier in the week, I don't know whether he was asked directly or whether he brought it up, but Cameron Carter-Vickers was talking about Simpson QC and saying that he had been impressed with him in training, and said that his ball progression, etc., was an interesting aspect. I don't know whether that is worth looking at, but if you are going to be playing a system where you're going to be having guys who are playing, having an awful lot of the ball at the back, Carter-Vickers and Scales are excellent defenders, without a doubt. But is their ball progression really their strength? And considering how much of the passing lanes they operate, maybe there is some scope to be using it. But no, I kind of agree with James. If Brendan Rodgers had seen these players in training and thought they were any good, we have been struggling, we've been treading water, the chances are he would have probably put them in by now.
That's a fair point.
Here's one other thing I want to say to some of the guys who are posting comments. Again, do yourselves a favour and fucking listen to what I say and read what I fucking write. I am not defending the manager. I am not defending the manager. Somebody just posted a comment that he read the piece that I wrote about Rodgers where I was slagging his comments when he done his Honda analogy. Correct. I did criticise Rodgers. It's ridiculous what Rodgers did at the weekend. Rodgers has no defence for that performance or for some of the other performances that we've been watching since February. No defence whatsoever. But if you guys are going to be constantly blaming Rodgers for this, then be fair at least, be objective at least, and look at the hand the guy's been dealt and look at the people above him and the job they've done. We're trying to be critical but fair at the same time. Rodgers does bear part of the responsibility for this. And if Rodgers gets this tits up as he's doing right now, Rodgers is the one whose career will suffer for it. His reputation will be in shreds by the time he leaves here if things continue in the path they're on. Rodgers knows what he's got to do.
Absolutely.
It's imperative that Rodgers that leaves here a winner. Imperative that Rodgers leaves here a winner. And he knows better than anybody. Nobody is defending Rodgers.
James, all of you guys, the problem now is domestically he's ending into a week that could be pivotal in his career. Yeah. And like, he has to come up with better ideas when we go to Tynecastle.
The problem we've got right now is Rodgers should have been looking at those alternative ideas weeks ago.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We've now got to improvise in a matter of days before we go to Tynecastle. That's a major problem.
Two international windows in that period of time as well. So there has been an opportunity to try alternatives on the training field. Now, the first one, I think we only lost 5 players to international duty. Granted, in the second one, there was 11 away. But in the first one, there was an opportunity to behind the scenes to have experimented somewhat in terms of how he wants to approach it, or at least formulated a backup plan. Because when we went to Braga and we went to the second half at Braga, we were losing that midfield battle. The only reason that was changed was because we were a man short in midfield. And it was as obvious to anyone who'd taken up football 2 days before. The only reason that switched to back three was because it took him 45 minutes to work out he was losing his midfield battle. And even then, it was still that lopsided system. We played with a left back, 2 centre halves, and asked Carter-Vickers to cover right centre back and almost cover right back on his own as well, because he wasn't getting an awful lot of support from ahead of him. There were opportunities in those international windows prior to that to at least formulate and practice with a plan B. Now, he might have done, but there seems little evidence of it so far.
But you see, the problem is, guys, right? We go to Tynecastle next week. We know now that there has to be a different approach in this game. But then there's Hamden the following week. And let's be honest about it. The Ibrox side are an absolute shambles. They're a shit show. Danny Rowell isn't going to change much in that period of time. And it is confirmed this evening that Danny Rowell is officially the manager. He was on the front of the record in his blazer and his tie. So that's official now. The simple fact is, Rodgers has not beaten the Ibrox side in a long time now. Okay, we have to go back to September of last year. To the time outside, we will talk about in the league, but also, okay, we won on penalties in the League Cup final. But the fact of the matter here is, he is coming up to a side that has been utterly shambolic this season. There isn't much that role is going to be able to change in the space of a week and a half, 2 weeks.
We should have been making the transition weeks ago.
Yeah. So, okay, you would. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. You would understand if we don't get a result at Tynecastle the way things have been going at the moment. You would not understand if we don't get a result against them at Hampden. And that, to my mind, that leads into making life very easy for the board. Because that gives the board, if he gets knocked out of the League Cup, he loses to Hearts, we have some poor European results mixed in there, his jacket's on a shoot peg. The board will be looking at it and saying, you know, now's our time to pull the trigger.
I'm not convinced the board is in any position to sack Rodgers. I'm not convinced that they have any... I'm not convinced that they have the guts to do it.
But you're not thinking they're looking for an excuse?
Even if it becomes absolutely, undeniably necessary to do it, I don't think they'll do it. Because, listen, the minute you get rid of the manager, right, then the focus is back on them, and they don't want the focus on them. They'll keep Rodgers in there, twisting like a fish in the end of a line for as long as they can. At the end of this season... At the end of the season, they're going to have to make the biggest decision that any of them has ever made. And I don't trust them to make it. I don't trust them to make a good one. By the way, we've been extraordinarily fortunate. And the managers that we've hired in the last 20 years, extraordinarily fortunate. At least three of them were bolts out of a clear blue sky. And I simply do not believe that they will get this one right. Because I look at the available manager pool and who's likely to be on the available manager pool, and the credible ones won't touch us. They won't come anywhere near us. And I won't be able to blame any of them for it. Because, I mean, you see the situation at Ibrox right now and the difficulty they've had finding a manager. Two managers have already walked away on the basis of being told what the policy is. Now, I know there's a lot of Ibrox fans who are blaming Thirlwell and blaming the chairman and whatever for this. But the fact is, all these guys did when they met with these managers is when it came to the fine detail, they said, this is the policy. This is what the guys above us have decided, and this is what you have to work with. And at that point, Gerrard and Muscat both went, no thanks. Now, these guys are getting blamed for that. You're getting Thirlwell getting blamed for that. You're getting Stewart getting blamed for that. But the two of them are just instruments of policy. They've just went and told the managers, this is how it's going to be. And when we... next interview a manager, we're going to have to tell them this is how it's going to be. You'll be a head coach. We will sign your players. We will decide the signing strategy based on algorithms and numbers and mathematics. And you're just going to have to work with what you get. And the credible manager is going to come and work under that. And even if credible managers were prepared to come and work under that system, the first thing that they will do is call Rodgers and they will say, what are they like to work for personally? And Rodgers will say, what? The people who stab me in the back don't even ask.
Yeah,
we're in deep shit here. Let's not beat around the bush. We're in deep shit here.
We are, but like James, if, and this is not beyond the realms of possibility, if they pulled the trigger, right, you would not put it past them to put John Kennedy in charge of the squad till the rest of the season.
100%. I could see that happening.
That's the ultimate disaster.
I think Sean Maloney might. I don't think John Kennedy would go near it.
They would. Kennedy's they did already it before. They'd do it again. What do you think, Joe?
I don't think John Kennedy would touch it. He's been around. He's wise. And I think he was probably quite keen when Ange was interested in taking him to Spurs. The notion that he's just sitting there waiting for his turn, I suspect that's not true. But... The bottom line is the next manager is going to be worse than Brendan Rodgers. So everyone that's slagging him off, everyone that's having a pop at him, hearing him how hopeless he is, this, that, and the next thing, just wait to see who's coming next. Because the last two occasions, as James suggested, we have been incredibly lucky. We didn't have a clue who to replace Neil Lennon with. We had a managerial review in, I think, December. And we come up with solution in February 2021. And that managerial review came up with a conclusion that Neil Lennon is the best manager to be in charge. Neil Lennon is the best man to be in charge of Celtic. A couple of weeks later, he lost again to Ross County and was gone. He tried for weeks and weeks to try and find anyone. And finally, Ange Postecoglou's agent, Frank Tromboli, was banging in doors all across Europe to try and get him in. AK Athens made a mess of it, and Celtic landed very lucky. Ange came in with Frank Tromboli working on recruitment, and he left with Mark Lowell working on recruitment. I wonder why. And then, fortunately, Leicester had sacked Brendan Rodgers a couple of months earlier. Brendan Rodgers, like it or not, he is a Celtic fan. He thought there was unfinished business. He came back for it, but that wasn't the best of choices, because all the people had contrived against them in 2018, 2019, they're still there, and they've still got the same loyalty to the same man. So Rodgers came back thinking his ego would sort things out. He could rise above it. If he delivers success, everyone will be on board. But there's one very resentful character at Celtic. It was never going to happen. So good luck to the board. I mean, let's see, Nicholson and Mackay wouldn't know a football manager from a double-decker bus. I'll be down to Dermot Desmond. Dermot Desmond has got a good instinct. Dermot Desmond tends to know decent managers to put them in and then leaves them to get on with it when the infrastructure isn't there. And again, decent, competent managers, they'll be saying, what's your recruitment structure? How are the players coming through from the youth team? Is there anyone I can bring through? And at the weekend, Celtic B lost at home. I think it was 3-1 to Bo'ness United. That's on top of the defeats to Bonnyrigg Rovers, Linlithgow Rovers, and whoever else. So there is very little at Celtic. Fortunately, in recent times, we've been able to get results and dominate domestically. We've had one good season in Europe in the last 10 years. And for all those that are rubbing their hands with glee and looking forward to getting rid of Rodgers, it's going to be brutal next time around if the same people are still there. And there's not really any signs that the decision maker at Celtic is more interested in boardroom changes. His priority is the pin positions and the length of grass on the fairway tomorrow. And that's a pretty desperate state of affairs.
I mean, there's an awful thing. Again, there's this presumption out there that Dermot Desmond is some kind of micromanager and that he takes an interest in every single thing that's going on at Celtic Park. Do you really think that guy, if he really was engaged and interested, would have let this drift like this, would have let this get in this mess? It's absolutely mad, man. We don't have leadership at the club at any level. We don't have any real visible leadership anywhere. Desmond seems, as you say, Joe, more interested in his golf score than he does about what's going on at Celtic Park right now. He doesn't come to AGMs, he barely comes to games. Him and Brendan talk every once in a while, but he's never once backed Brendan in anything meaningful. He's never once took Brendan's side and made sure that Brendan got the backing and the support that Brendan needs, and that we pay Brendan £2 million a year to exercise. It's mad. There's just the structure of the club is an absolute shambles.
So, which brings me nicely into our next point on the agenda, guys. So we know, you were just discussing Dermot Desmond there, James, and we know that Dermot Desmond is the major shareholder. Celtic is 34% of the shares. So I have a few questions surrounding the other 66%. So I'm interested to know what, if any kind of influence those 66% have over the club. And, you know, I'm going to put a few questions to you guys in this one, and you might be able to enlighten me on it. Like, Who owns the other 66% of the shares? Who is the next major shareholder at Celtic outside of Dermot Desmond?
Memory sales and connect.
Linsel Trainor, the second biggest one. This what's is their holding? The issue. I can check that for you, actually. It was recently 18.6, but I think they just recently sold a small part of that, 0.6 or 0.7. percent of it, which was I'm not really sure the details as to why that was, but Linsel Train, that's that what it was at that just over 16%. I think it gives Dermot Desmond that block vote, doesn't it? So no matter what happens at a shareholder meeting, Linsel Train and Dermot Desmond, if they vote the same way, whatever they want passes, or whatever Dermot want passes. I think there's even an argument to say that the amount of dormant shares that we have at Celtic, which is something around about 15 to 20%, I think, means that even without Linsel Train, Dermot Desmond pretty much has outright control of it. So I think his shareholding standing as it stands, the amount he purchased. I think he was given special permission when he underwrote the share issue back in the day to not have to make an outright bid the club.
That's right.
And I think so. But to all intents and purposes, no matter who the other shareholders are at Celtic, Dermot Desmond, whether it's through the block vote with Lindsay Jane, assuming that relationship holds, or even if it doesn't hold, I think the dormant shares, because they've got no vote, means that Dermot Desmond himself would probably be able to carry whatever actions he wanted to put through. So a de facto owner, perhaps. Yeah. Certainly a dominant shareholder, perhaps even a de facto owner, I would suggest. Yeah.
So, then in that case...
Is it Chris Traynor that owns 11%? I think Law owns a minor percentage. I think Chris Mackay might own a minor percentage as well.
I think it's Chris Traynor at 11, yeah. And James, was it James or Mark Keane? I can never remember. Is just over 6% as well.
That's right. That's still, so I knew there was one of them on there. Yep.
Okay. So in terms of that then, guys, I mean, what's the actual breakdown of the annual revenue at Celtic at the moment? And, like, I mean, how is it even broken up amongst these guys? I mean, in terms of, like, how are they, what are they getting out of it? What kind of dividends are they getting out of it as opposed to what Dermot Desmond is getting out of it, you know? I mean, obviously he's getting the biggest amount of dividends out of it, but the other guys, like, are they just, obviously they're just there to get their dividends and that's it.
I'm not even sure there's much in the way of dividends paid out. Perhaps Joe knows. Joe's certainly written about that in the past.
The share issue that Dermot Desmond went big in, that guarantees dividends, but there's very few shares that do pay out dividends. So guys like Traynor and Mark Keane, who's the son of John Keane, who was very, very significant in 1994. I don't think there's any appetite from any of them to get involved, to become active. They're quite happy. They've got a shareholding that I think over the last 2 years, the price has probably went up from about, it was steady at £1 for a long time. I think it's now about £1.70. And if they ever wanted to sell up, they'd make a nice profit in the price they paid. But I think they're happy not to rock the boat. The club's domestically successful. The books are balanced. There's no debt issues. If any of them had any real ambition, I mean, Willie Hawkey's probably got a bigger shareholding than some of the folk have been mentioned. Tom Allison, I think he's got about 1.5%. So there's all these folk, but as Niall pointed out, about 15 to 20% of the shares are dormant and missing. So the Celtic Supporters Limited, they're another group that seems to be making a bit of a push. I don't know if they were behind the sale from Lindsay Train, but the shareholding is all generally pretty dormant. There's not as if there's any buying and selling, trading, any movement. Dermot Desmond gets his dividend and others, they're quite happy to take a back seat and see how things go.
Okay.
I think it's probably been quite a long game, to be honest, from Dermot Desmond's perspective. I mean, bar that initial underwriting of the share issue, there hasn't been an awful lot of chance for Dermot Desmond to put money into the club. He's not had to. He's always struck me, and it's an opinion, that he almost, that capitalist way of running a club on the minimum amount of money possible, limiting the costs to the absolute minimum, but maybe looking at the longer game. I think initially he probably looked to the English Premiership and believed there was a possibility Celtic could play there. I believe he probably then considered the possibility of that North Atlantic League at one stage and thought that that might be an opportunity. So instead of dividends getting paid, they're playing the longer game and thinking that come a sale or coming access to those markets, the value of the club goes up significantly, and perhaps they press the button at that stage and make the killing, at that financial killing at that stage. Perhaps that's always been the way they've worked it, and they never expected it to get to 20-odd years without something along those lines happening to allow that them to cash in that way. But I certainly don't think there's any issue in terms of them taking money, particularly taking any money out of the club. I think what they want to do is run it with the least resistance possible with a view to making that financial killing further down the line.
Okay. So just on that point, now, we know that the Celtic Fans Collective has, you know, not another penny is the new campaign, right? And that campaign is going to be obviously based on, the big part of that campaign is obviously going to be based around merchandise, okay, and targeting Adidas. Do you guys know what the current Adidas deal is? What are Adidas paying the club at the moment to wear the, to market their gear and wear their gear?
Absolutely nobody knows. Celtic signed a 10-year deal with them in the summer, and there's various websites speculating at it, and no one's got a clue. There'll be a main upfront payment, and there'll be bonus payments based in volumes, and it'll be reviewed at different times. But anyone saying it's worth 5 million a year, 8 million, 10 million a year, they're just guessing. It'll be between Celtic and Adidas. It'll be kept confidential. It's a significant part of income. I think in the last full accounts with a breakdown, 2024, it might have been about 28 million that came in from merchandise overall. So it's a significant amount for Celtic. And again, Celtic will get money directly from Adidas, and Celtic will get money from everything it's sold in the Celtic stores, the same as Sports Direct and JID Sports and anyone else. But no one knows the value of the Adidas deal. And clearly, there'll be a reasonable element of that that's dependent on sales and volume. So there's pretty strong rumours, quite a few folks saying that September sales were down 50%. I presume that will be on September last year. If that's the case, that's just supporters sickened by it. If the going's good, folk are likely to go out and buy things. If the going's not so good, they're less likely to go and buy things. There was interesting stuff with this SPZL launch at the weekend, which was flooded on eBay with the 230-pound jacket become the 300-pound jacket. So no one knows, but merchandise is a pretty significant income stream for the club. I think overall merchandise was probably more than the money that comes in from season ticket sales. So it's something that is important and something that the club needs to continue working on.
Yeah, so, but obviously there's an Adidas representative that the club deals with, okay? So is he not now, if revenue was down 50% in September, it's most likely going to be down again substantially in October, because we're now entering into the campaign of Not Another Penny, which is targeting merchandise in general. It's part of it. It's a big part of it anyway. So what Adidas would have to be looking at this and going back to the board and saying, listen, guys, you know, we put our faith in you. You've done a fantastic job up to now. You've, you know, broken all sorts of records. We didn't expect this kind of return on it, but what's happened? What's gone wrong and why has it happened? And, like, is it going to put Adidas in a position where they're worried about their partnership with Celtic because of what's going on at the club right now?
Well, I mean, Adidas must be wondering what the hell is going on right now, right? Because they've just signed a record deal. Celtic fans will buy anything that Adidas produce. I mean, that's just a fact. And if they're seeing a 20-30% drop in sales, they've been looking at the situation at Celtic and thinking, what the hell's happened there that we're facing this? Whose fault is this? And it will not take them very long to figure it out. I mean, we're the most successful club in this country by quite a distance, not just by the official numbers, considering our alleged closest rivals are, I think they've got 3 trophies. We're the most successful club in this country. We've won the last 4 titles in a row. Last season, we did well in the Champions League, well enough that a lot of us thought we were building a stairway to the future instead of ending up in the basement again. And they know that just on a broad look, the club looks like it's doing well. So they must be wondering, we've got fan protests all of a sudden, we've got boycotts. What the hell is happening there? What the hell is happening there? We've got games getting stopped because people are throwing balls onto the pitch. What is going on at Celtic? And yes, that creates a bit of internal pressure. on the people in charge. And that's how it should be. That's how it needs to be. We need to just keep ramping that pressure up by whatever means we can. And the boycott will work in that respect. The boycott will work in that respect.
Yeah, but their crass reaction to it.
Buy-in. See, we'll never get total buy-in, right? But you have to wonder at what level it starts to hurt them and it starts to hurt the board of directors because of the pressure they're putting on the board of directors. As I said a couple of weeks ago, what does a successful boycott look like at a club like Celtic? 20%, 30% is a serious, serious number.
And that when you're talking already 50% in September, and now we're entering into that campaign of not a penny, not another penny. So now, continue what you were about to say now.
It's unnecessary for us to have got here. It's completely unnecessary. So something must have gone wrong somewhere, completely, spectacularly, gloriously wrong. And they will want to know where things have gone wrong and what people intend to do to fix it. That's the kind of pressure we want to create.
I think the 50% figure, I saw in the comments someone saying that wasn't true. I think that figure actually came from, I think it was Paul John Dykes over on Axiom.
He stated that total club from merchandise.
Yeah, not just the Adidas, certainly not just the Adidas. It was over the shops altogether. That's a significant amount. And I think it's worth also bearing in mind, as you mentioned, just I think you were starting to allude to, Eric, is that was without an official boycott. That was without the Celtic Fans Collective putting out there saying, let's do this together. And let's also consider one other possibility. It's October now. We're moving into November. We're hitting the Christmas market. You can't tell me this with any other business. The vast majority of Celtic's sales don't happen across November, December, and even into the sales part of January. And with that being a concerted effort across the fan base, okay, Joe's right. Not everyone is going to engage with this by any manner of means. But I've spoken to a lot of people who are. In fact, far more who are than aren't. Now, there will be some parents who won't be able to handle the pressure of when their kids ask for 3 strips at Christmas and all the rest of it. But as a collective, one thing I've really admired about them is they've not asked everyone to do it. They've just asked everyone who wants to do it to do it. And that unity going forward will create a great deal of strength. But that 50% figure, even if that's based on the same time last year or whatever way those figures came out, and yes, it's not just Adidas, it's right across the board, that's significant considering it hadn't even been asked for. That was fans doing that off their own back without the Fans Collective being together at that point.
And then you obviously have the crass reaction of the board last Friday. Was it that they put up the imagery of the people outside the Celtic Superstore at Celtic Park? And that was a petty, immature reaction to that whole situation. I mean, that's basically, you know, them saying, nothing to see here, there's nothing wrong here. And clearly there is. And again, that reeks of incompetence, that they would react like that and they would portray something as, you know, which could be serious to the revenue streams of Celtic, as, you know, something as serious as that. And they're not, they don't seem to want to take anything that the fans are doing seriously. So, Joe, what do you think? I mean, what's it going to take for them to take what's going on with the fan base seriously?
Nothing. They're not going to change. It'll take Dermot Desmond saying, what's going on? He'll not say what's going on. It says, you're fired. I mean, if Nicholson and Mackay, as long as there's money coming in, they'll make sure that the expenditure going out is less than that, so they're turning a profit. And in the January transfer window, you can bet your bottom dollar that Nicholson is determined to turn over another profit. It'll be sickened that he's lost about half of Maeda's value, or possibly more than half of it, but he'll certainly be selling them. And the uncertainty over Brendan Rodgers, that gives them the excuse in their eyes not to invest. But the team needs players. It's not Brendan Rodgers that needs players. The team needs players. But Michael Nicholson said nothing in 4 years, so he's just going to get his head down and go on with things. And whatever money's coming in, we'll spend a bit less going out, and that'll keep everyone happy. I mean, a CEO is meant to provide leadership and decision-making. I mean, if there's been any decisions made by Michael Nicholson, let me know about it. So these guys are just going to keep on doing as they're doing until they're told otherwise. So it's up to billionaire. He might be a multi-billionaire or a double billionaire, but he's certainly a billionaire. If he starts to notice things and set and makes decisions, but until that happens, nothing happens.
Yeah, that's a fair enough assessment of it, Joe. So we move on. We'll have our weekly dose of across having a look at what's going on across the city. And finally, they have a new manager in Danny Rowell. So I'm going to go to you on this one, Niall. Do you think Danny Rowell is going to be a Russell Martin Mark II? Because he doesn't strike me as being the kind of Ibrox-centric manager you'd expect that they would want anyway. He's very much a guy who likes to wear his tracksuits. So is he going to be a guy who wears a tracksuit on the sideline and once again flies in the face of the Brown Rogues and the blazer and the tie? And his hairstyle isn't a whole pile different to Russell Martin's, which was a source of a lot of criticism during Russell Martin's brief tenure. So is this guy serious? Is this guy up to the job? I mean, I saw he has a 38% win ratio in his time in management as manager of Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday and the Ibrox club is some leap when you consider the pressure. He's going from a club that he had to try and sort of pull out of the mire when they were fighting relegation from the Championship to a club where from day one, he's going to be expected to win. He's going to be expected to win yesterday, not tonight, tomorrow. You know, and then he's obviously got this monumental League Cup semi-final, which we're sort of even, you know, looking at with a bit of trepidation because of the way things are going at the moment. But still, is he the like, you got to look at the way things have gone there over the last few managers. Do we really think this is the guy who can turn it around there? I don't think so. Do you think so?
The truth of the matter with Danny Rowell is we won't know until he starts. There's certainly an element of pressure working in a job as big as Sheffield Wednesday with the fan base, but it's going to come nothing compared to the pressure that he's going to take on at Ibrox. The fan pressure will be immediate. Like you said, Eric, it will be immediate results expected. I think what he does have to his advantage is he's got a good grounding in the game and a good education in the game. He's learned under Hansi Flick.
He was number two of Bayern Munich, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, one of the assistants anyway. I'm not sure if it was number two. You could be right on that. But he certainly would have had a good grounding under Flick. And what he has worked under Sheffield Wednesday is absolute chaos. So when it comes into working under further chaos, he's got some experience. We'll give him that. So he might be able to come in from that side. But you did make an interesting point earlier on. He's probably a rung down on the managerial ladder from Russell Martin, who was arguably a rung down from Baltimore, whatever his name was, previous to that. This is a club who, a few months after reaching a Europa League final, sacked the manager and gave it to the previous manager's assistant. This has been a downward spiral for this club. And I think what's played out over the recent times since the sacking is they can't seem to attract a manager to the club. Now, yeah, as James mentioned earlier, there is a lot of stuff going around that as soon as it gets in front of Thelwell that everything falls apart. I'm not buying that either. What's happening is at the point of communication of what is expected, under what budget, etc., that's falling apart. Gerrard didn't fly all the way from, where was he based, Bahrain, fly all the way to London to have an interview. He was set on going for that job. Something happened with those conversations, with those plans, with those budgets, perhaps with the expectations, I don't know, that made him refuse that job. Now you've got down to Danny Rowell, who is probably another big job short, you would expect, of being capable of coming into being a manager at a club like that. Sheffield Wednesday will have given him a good grounding. I have absolutely no doubt about that. I also believe that he will be a good coach. He doesn't seem to be the type, however, that the Rangers fans would welcome put their arm around, support, give time, give patience. I don't see it happening for Rowe immediately. And the problem he is going to have is he might have worked under pressure before, but it is going to be immediate. He's just watched his predecessor have to leave under police escort before he lost his job. From that side of it, he knows he's going to have to hit the ground running. Will he be capable of hitting the ground running? All I can say is he's a decent grounding at a big club, but this is a hell of a jump to take.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, what do you think?
I don't go along with this, but massive pressure. I mean, Captain Disappointed has got by for 10 years. So if you get a contract, you're winning. So he seems to be quite a decent manager. I think he did quite well in the circumstances at Sheffield Wednesday. He's got a good coaching background, but the toxic supporters will soon sort him out. The slightest their weakness, and they'll be after him. They detest Thelwell and Stewart, and he'll be seen as being someone that was agreeable to their plans for the club. So that's an obvious sign of weakness. A German wearing a poppy, that'll be a good sign. I'll see how that goes. As I say, I think he's probably quite a decent coach, a decent manager. He could possibly work at a reasonable level in Germany or England, but their support will soon do what they do. He's not even getting cheered to the rafters, and neither was Russell Martin. However, Beale was brought in like a all-conquering hero, the brains behind Gerrard. Clement was brought in. He was a hero because he wasn't Beale, etc., etc. So you get a very short attention span. You get a very short lifespan at Ibrox, and I would suggest he'll be gone next summer. It won't last a year. Clement, they seem determined to try and prove that we're out of this cycle of the autumn sacking season. But they're back on track again because Clement stayed on too long and Russell Martin got less time. So it doesn't take much. Hearts have shown it. It doesn't take much to be reasonably successful in Scotland. Get a bit of success, a bit of consistency. But the expectations of their supporters, once it starts going downhill, they'll be on top of him straight away. So it's a familiar story. We've all seen the graphic. The graphic will be in use again fairly soon. The new manager's a genius. Then I think two or three steps down the line, they'll be screaming for him to go.
Yeah, but James, I'll go to you now. I'm going to put the question to you. If Danny Rowe wants to make his mark, he'll change the captaincy, won't he?
Well, before I start, I was going to congratulate our Hearts fan friend about being on here tonight.
Oh, yeah, I'm giving him more time. You know, he has something to shout about. So.
But I noticed that the Ibrox fan who's usually on, isn't he on the night? And I'm wondering if maybe we really do have a Hearts fan on here. Mind you, some of the people on here pretending to be Celtic fans, I'm wondering about them as well. The one thing I'll say to your Hearts fan is that I'm going to put up a piece about this tomorrow. I've got a theory about this whole thing. That once you've lost the first game, maybe the second game, that it will collapse like a house of cards. Because it's not really built on very much. If you think that Derek McInnes is the guy who's going to break the Glasgow dominance and win a league title in Scotland, that's never going to happen. He never looked remotely capable of it at Aberdeen. He does not look remotely capable of it now. So, you know, I would not get your hopes up too much because it's house built on sand. No offence. It's nice to have a challenge for once, but it's not going to last. In terms of our friend across the city, our new friend across the city, our new little plaything, our new little pet, his grave's already dug. Lime and everything, it's already dug. He doesn't stand a chance. He does not stand a chance. I've listened to a lot of people talk about his background in Germany, and he was assistant to this guy and he was assistant to that guy. Well, John Kennedy's been assistant to Brendan Rodgers and Ange Postecoglou, and I think he was working at Celtic under Martin O'Neill, but you would not give that guy the keys to run the dressing room in a million years. I don't think a single one of us was scared when Carlo Ancelotti's boy was going to get it. When he looked like he was going to get it on the back of his daddy's rip. I've been assistant to my daddy for all these years. Very unimpressive. Assistant managers do not make good managers in general. There are a few exceptions. I mean, look at how many of Alec Ferguson's assistant managers went on, tried their hand as the number one guy in the dugout. None of them could cut it. I mean, there isn't a single success story among them. So his assistant manager career doesn't really impress me that much. He's got a good grounding. You're right about that. Now, he's got a good grounding in Germany. It's a much better education than he would have got had he been coming up in Scotland or even in England. But on its own, it's still not very much. By the way, I'm not underestimating Hearts at all. I am not underestimating Hearts. But I have not seen a club in Scotland outside of Glasgow that's had the staying power and the stamina to win 20, 30 games in a season for decades. Decades, okay, and do I believe that a Derek McInnes led Hearts is going to be the first one of them to do it? No chance in him, none, zero. The chances against it are outrageous. That's lottery winner odds, so I wouldn't get my hopes up if I was a Hearts fan. But Danny Rose, he's done already. I mean, you got half the media who hate the guy, before he's even managed a single game.
I'm sure Barry'll jump on the bandwagon.
Three quarters of the Ibrox fans had their wee heart set on Gerrard's return, and then they were all in on Muscat, and this just feels like a complete letdown for them. And there are some of them, and I share their suspicion, who harbour the view that this is the guy the board wanted to appoint in the first place, and that a lot of what we've seen with Gerrard and Muscat have just been them dragging it out for their own sakes to make it look like they at least tried. There is a suspicion that that's the case. I don't quite subscribe all the way to that, but I get where the idea comes from. The suspicions are probably not groundless. This is the guy they wanted to appoint all along, because he's the guy who will work best under the system that they've laid out. And as Niall says, the pressure, he's never been in anything like this before. He's never been in anything like this. By the way, nobody has been in anything like this before. He's coming in on the back of a managerial disaster. He's coming in to take his place at a club where the new owners are already almost as hated, if not more hated, than the old owners were. And except that these guys will only pay through the nose to keep the lights on. And they'll try and run it as tight a ship as possible. So he's never experienced anything like this in his career. It's not just a case of you need to win. I mean, he said that the day. But winning there isn't enough any longer. You need to be able to beat Celtic consistently. You need to be able to win titles and trophies. You need to give the whole club back this swagger that it thinks it should have. And anything less than that, anything less than looking like you're going to turn them into a dominant force, you're just going to get absolutely pilloried from first day to last. The first slip up, the first bad result, even the first bad performance, they're going to be on this guy's back. He's never dealt with anything like this. By the way, it has broken better managers than this guy. Van Bronckhorst came in having won titles in Holland. Clermont came in having won titles in Belgium. Their managerial CVs are vastly better than this guy's. And the job crushed him. Absolutely crushed him. This guy's getting no chance whatsoever.
Yeah, but Germans have a tendency to be ruthless. And I could see this guy stripping the captaincy, you know. And I mean, that's if he wants to make his mark starting there, he needs to strip the captaincy from Captain Disappointed.
I'm not sure I agree about that, Eric. I think one of the big mistakes Russell Martin made was trying to do too much too soon at Ibrox. He tried to bring a lot of players in, put them straight in the team, instead of leaving a core to slowly, slowly strip back. If Rowe's got any common sense about him, he'll get some of those guys on side for the initial part of it. And slowly build on that. And perhaps in the January window, maybe only look at 2-3 players, depending on who goes out. But slowly, slowly. Yeah. And I genuinely think that Rowe might have the sense to actually do that. I think Russell Martin got a little bit carried away with his own ego by the time he'd arrived at Rangers. He had, in his mind, he'd done brilliantly at Southampton. He did well to get promoted at Southampton. But his win rate to his loss rate was almost equal, you know? And then he came into a dressing room thinking that they would be, perhaps that Ibrox dressing room would some way be lauding the arrival of a former Premier League manager to get them out of the mire. And I think he lost the dressing room quite early on. And I think part of that was down to the fact that he perhaps removed players. I think from what I heard, Dessers was a popular chap in the dressing room. They punted him and got a striker for £8 million who's hardly kicked a ball in his career. There's some bizarre signings were made in that. Whether they were all Russell Martin or whether they were Thelwell, who knows? But the changes were probably too quick. And I think it was ego-driven rather than talent-driven from Russell Martin. And that was probably his downfall. If Rowe's got any sense in it, you'll have looked at what happened through the Russell Martin thing and perhaps take things that little bit slowly. And I think that involves getting a senior group of players together and trying to get them to have your back at least through to the January transfer window and see how he goes with that. Whether he gets the time, whether he's the sort the Ibrox fans like, as Joe mentioned previously, patience isn't going to be in abundance. They've got a lot of ground to catch up on, and they have that. Yeah. They've always had that feeling where they not only deserve to be up there where Hearts and Celtic are at the moment, they'll be feeling that they are in a race against time to get up there as quickly as possible. They'll see us slipping at Dundee. They'll probably see what James said about Hearts and expecting that bubble to burst at some point. There'll still be people within that fan base that think Celtic are rocking. We're going after them this season. There mightn't be no evidence for that, but that's what they'll expect. And that might be the biggest pressure on him. And if that is the biggest pressure on him, trying to unify that dressing room ASAP is his only chance at getting up that table.
I actually thought that the worst thing that happened to Philip Clement, the absolute worst, and I wrote it at the time, was that he got his nose in front briefly in that first season. And I remember when there was all this talk that he had turned them around and all that, and that he might go on and win a treble. I was thinking that this is it for you. This is as good as it gets. Because if you had came in and almost got there and maybe closed the gap to within a few points, you would have been lauded as a hero for that. But knew you're the guy who threw it away. Knew you're the guy who got his nose in front and cracked under the pressure. And that starts next season where you've got to win right for the start or you're screwed. And it was the worst thing that happened to him, was getting his nose just ever so slightly in front and then not closing it. Because that's when the doubt started about him. And once they started, they never went away. And that's what this guy's up against and all, straight away. Straight away. Well, I mean, what does a success look like? Put it this way, if he finishes third to Hearts, he's done. It's game over. Yeah. And he won't be forgiven for that. If he loses the League Cup semi-final, he's got one foot in the grave already, as far as their fans are concerned. Because they're convinced that they're watching the worst Celtic team of a generation. And if he can't beat us, then that's it. All the doubts are going to be there, right from the beginning.
Absolutely.
I would not want to be in his position right now, except that he's on a 2.5 year deal when he'll walk away with a few £1 million. I would take his job for it.
Okay, guys, we've gone slightly over time, so we've got just two brief points left on the agenda. The first one, I'll go to all of you on this one. How do you, starting with Joe, feel we're going to fare against Hearts next Sunday?
I could cop out and say I think it will be a draw, but as it stands, we are looking at a 2-0 defeat. I hope I'm wrong, but there's not been much. Discount the Partick Thistle match. The league games have all been a struggle, and that's against struggling teams. So we're going to Hearts, and I'll stand by for a pleasant surprise. But if I was to put money on any outcome, any result, it certainly wouldn't be Celtic winning. One each would be a cop-out, but as I say, as it stands, I think you're looking at a 2-0 defeat.
What about you now?
I think a lot of it depends on how the players react to what happened at Dens Park. I do think there's still an awful lot of belief, I would imagine, defensively in the squad. I think our shape out of possession when we're in that 4-4-2 is still solid. The midfield and the attack were the initial problems this season. First of all, the attack and then the midfield. And now the defence has been rocking with that Dens Park win. That worries me. I've got no doubt. I would have been going in far more confident had the defence still been solid. But yeah. I think there will be a reaction from them going into that game. These are players. There's a lot of players still at that club who've been over this course. They know what it takes. They can go to places like Ibrox, Pittodrie and Tynecastle, and they can get results. I have absolutely no doubt about that. But is there still the appetite there? Is that hunger still there? Do they still want it? Have they had it for too long? Have too many gone over the top? Should they have been moved on? We don't know. That's the truth of the matter. One thing's certain, you're going to one of the toughest grounds in Scotland, playing a team with incredible momentum at the moment. And it'd be interesting to see what the bookies price this up at, because I can't imagine there would be much between the teams, where normally, I think, even at Tynecastle, we would have been strong favourites. If the truth be told, at the moment, if I was offered a draw, I would probably take it.
Okay. So you're going for a draw. Yeah. Would that be your prediction now? 1-1, nil all?
Yeah. No, I think we can get at least a draw at Tynecastle. I really do. I think a lot of it depends on the reaction to Dens Park, but that has to be an idea. That has to be rock bottom for us, Dens Park. There has to be a reaction. Something has to happen. And I would hope in the space of time that we have that we get a reaction and we go there and act like a Celtic team.
Fair enough. All good points. James, what way are you saying it?
Celtic will beat Hearts on Sunday. And the reason I think so is that I would say with complete confidence, right, that if we were going to Rugby Park to play Kilmarnock under Derek McInnes, I would be very concerned, because all he would have done was put 11 men behind the ball and try and hit us on the counter, and almost certainly they would have got something with the state we're in right now. But these guys think that they're world beaters. These guys think that they've got one hand on the trophy and that all they have to do is turn up and clean our clock. And I think that is going to be the problem for them. They're not going to play McInnes' usual 11 men behind the ball game. They're going to be open. They're going to commit us. They're going to have a go. They're going to try and win the game. And they're going to create all the space that Dundee denied us and that Hibs denied us and that Motherwell were trying to deny us. And that's why we'll win.
Okay, and you know something, James? I'll echo those sentiments as well, because I wrote it in my article today. I think it's make or break for the boss as well. It's make or break for Brendan Rodgers too. He has to get a reaction out of the players after the result at Dundee. And I think going back to what Niall said, you know, that has to be rock bottom. So if he can get his players up for it, if he tweaks his tactics slightly, I think it'll be a slim win, 2-1, 1-0. Maybe, you know, I don't think it'll be, you're not going to run away with it. But maybe the whole Honda Civic comment might be the motivation that the guys need. maybe he'll try and use that to his advantage and say, look, guys, you know, I wasn't pointing that at you. I mean that we need to be like a Ferrari when we play against Hearts. That's what we need to do. We know we're capable of being a Ferrari. So let's go out there and be a Ferrari. Maybe.
You have to put some amount of spin on that, Eric, after what he said in the press to turn that around.
Yeah.
If I was a player in that dressing room, I'd be like, he's just called us a Honda Civic. Let's see how he comes out of this. Yeah.
Yeah, but would you not at the same time say, I'd bloody well prove him wrong?
I'd like to think some of them would, yeah.
That's interesting, because it's unusual language for Rodgers, isn't it? Rodgers, I've never heard Rodgers undermine his players like that.
Maybe
he's trying to jolt them into a reaction. Maybe he's trying to say to them, listen.
Yeah, but I think also, I think he was trying to crack a joke, which it's unlike Brendan Rodgers to do something like that, but I think he was trying to do something humorous, which backfired slightly on him. You know what I mean? I think he entered into that whole comment with the idea that it was a funny analogy that he was trying to make, and it backfired on him, and it was picked up. The timing of it was poor, and that's ultimately if he said something like that jokingly in less serious circumstances, the reaction mightn't have been as bad. But I think the circumstances at the moment are so serious, for most Celtic fans, it's not time to be cracking jokes like that. And that's why we've got the reaction we've got out of it, you know? What do you think, Joe? I mean, would that be your opinion on it?
We don't quite know the context. I could see him trying to crack a joke, but it wasn't the time to be cracking jokes. Yeah. And,
it's definitely targeted at the board as well. It's not just a dig at the player. It's a dig at the board and all.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's the expectations of the club. The Ferrari is playing in the Champions League, and yeah, when you get rid of your better players, I mean, just be very, very grateful this week we're not in the Champions League. I mean, it's a terrifying thought. The recruitment wouldn't have been any better in the final week of the transfer window. And if we were in the it's only Sturm Graz. And again, I wouldn't put a penny on Celtic winning that match. We'll see how it goes. But thankfully, we're not in the Champions League.
Well, it was only Braga last time around, wasn't it?
I'm telling you, judgment will come under serious question, right? If we play that game with the same tactical system we played at the weekend, because now he's got one game where he can try something different and see how it works and see if he can get it right. And other than that, we're going to Tynecastle either playing the same way or with something completely experimental. And this is his chance to find out if he's whatever ideas he's working on are going to work.
But he's got nothing to lose at this point in time because...
No, exactly. Like, I think most of us consider it a throwaway fixture, so...
Yeah, yeah. So, look, guys, we've got a bit over time. I want to thank Niall again for coming on, and his input was excellent. Thank you, Niall.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I hope it won't be the... I hope it's the first time, but I hope it won't be the last time. We'd like to have you on again in the future.
I'd love to, Nick. Yeah, absolutely.
And as usual... As in the people who are on and our fans, if they like what we're doing and they enjoy it, click like, subscribe. We're pushing towards the 2,000 subscribers at the moment, which is pretty good. We're as we've said plenty of times, we're a young podcast. We're just coming up on our first year anniversary in December, so we've been delighted with the response in the first year so far. We really, really got good momentum, and more often than not lately, we do have a guest on, so that's definitely benefiting the podcast. So I'll wrap it up with that. Once again, guys, thanks for your input. It's been a great one again, as usual. And we'll all reconvene this time next week, and we might possibly have another guest on. We'll see. But once again, thanks a million, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Hail, hail.
Cheers.
Hail, hail. Thank you. Bye-bye.